Attention all radio listeners. Your broadcast starting calling all cars. Program will be broadcast at 9 p.m. on Monday, beginning May 1st. That's all. Rosenquist.
Calling all cars. A copyrighted program created by Rio Grande.
Ontario County Sheriff's Office calling all cars. Attention all cars to broadcast 281 regarding a murder. Be on the lookout for three Filipinos. These men shot and killed a man near El Centro, this state. No description of suspect. That's all. Rosenquist.
The crack is refined so that it meets all the demands of public serving automobiles, whether it be speeding to the scene of a crime or slowly cruising a neighborhood to preserve peace. It is the money-saving gasoline of superior performance at any speed. When I point out that Rio Grande crack powers more police cars, fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency equipment wherever it is sold than any other brand, I always remind you that this great gasoline has a quicker start, appreciated by fast and slow drivers alike, that Rio Grande crack accelerates more smoothly, provides more power and miles per gallon, regardless of the rate of speed. So, come on, join the army of motorists who are getting the most out of their cars at the least cost with police car performance Rio Grande crack, the most highly recommended gasoline sold in the West. The facts upon which tonight's story has been based were taken from the confidential files of the Office of the Sheriff of Imperial County, California. We are privileged to welcome to Calling All Cars the present sheriff of that county, Mr. Robert W. Ware.
We in the Imperial Valley have a special problem in law enforcement. Geographically, we are so situated that we get more than our share of transient labor, and a large part of this labor is foreign-born or foreign extraction. Our laws are not always so well understood by these people, and in many instances, there is a lack of respect for law and order. Irrespective of the difficulty of our task, we spare no effort to emphasize the losing nature of crime of any sort. The story we are about to hear was no exception. Though it began in Imperial County, it had ramifications throughout the western states and was finally solved in the Hawaiian Highlands. How we were able to effect this solution, you will hear as the program progresses. And I will be back at the end of the program to explain further how we brought home to a group of lawbreakers the lesson that crime cannot pay.
A late afternoon breeze was beginning to relieve the sultriness that hung over the little town of Calipatria in Imperial County, California. Constable E.H. Stepford sat before a desk in the sheriff's substation, checking a sheaf of reports that lay face up beneath a wall calendar on which was printed the date November 19, 1932. Suddenly, Stepford became aware that he was not alone in the office and looked up to see a Mexican ranch hand standing just inside the doorway, uneasily twisting his hat with nervous fingers.
What's the matter, buddy? Want to see me about something?
Si, senor. I'm finding a man lying down in the road. Think I better come here and tell you.
A man lying in the road? Where?
Oh, two. Maybe 3 miles from here. It's a dirt road, not much cars. This man, I think he's pretty sick. He might be dead.
Who is he? Anyone you know?
No, he's a dark man. He's what you call a Hindu.
I think maybe he's dead.
That's no go coarse enough to look good, though.
Why not?
His lies are still to make me have fear.
All right. Wait a minute while I put through a phone call. Then we'll drive out and have a look at this fellow. Put me through to Sheriff George Campbell's office in El Centro, will you please, operator? See here, buddy. This better not be a cock and bull story you're telling me, because if it is,
County Sheriff's Office.
Oh, Sheriff Campbell?
No, he isn't in just now. This is
Under Sheriff
Rodney Clark.
Oh, hello, Clark. This is Petford up at Calipatria.
Oh, yes, that's right.
There's a Mexican here in the office who's just found a man's body lying in the road near town. He says he thinks the man's a Hindu. I thought maybe you might want to send somebody up here or come up yourself.
No details yet, huh?
No. I'm picking up Deputy Sheriff Ike Holmes right away. We're driving out to this Mexican to see what we can learn.
Okay, Bedford. You go ahead and investigate. I'll probably be up there by the time you get back.
Right. All right, buddy. Let's go take a look at your dead man. This is certainly a lonely enough road, Holmes. Not much more than a wagon trail.
Yeah, that's what makes me think this Mexican might have really stumbled onto something.
But how much farther is it, buddy?
Oh, he's just a little way now. You see those bush where the road turns?
Yeah.
I find this man lying down in the road just around that turn.
Then we'll know in a minute, Bedford.
Uh-huh. I'll slow down a little so we won't run over him if he's still there.
This is the turn. Just a little bit more. There, you see, he's still lying in the road.
By George, that's right.
Hey, I know this fellow. It's Cham Singh. He and another Hindu own a ranch not far from here.
Looks like he's been shot.
Yeah. As far as I can make out, he's still alive. Better get him to a hospital right away.
Yeah.
I'll give you a hand and we'll get him into the car.
Okay.
I'm going to stick to this man like a leech, Bedford. If he regains consciousness and we can get him to talk, we'll be able to clean up this case in no time.
After getting Cham Singh to a hospital, Deputy Sheriff Ike Holmes, true to his word, remained at the wounded man's bedside until consciousness and strength returned sufficiently for the man to make a statement.
You have a ranch somewhere near Calipatria, haven't you, Mr. Singh?
Yes. My partner, Brown Singh, and I grow peas.
Was Brown Singh with you when you were shot?
Yes, he was in the car. I don't know what they have done with him. I'm afraid for him.
They? Suppose you tell me the whole story from the beginning.
Yesterday, we finished with the pea harvest, and this morning, Brown Singh and I came into town to get the money from the bank to pay off the men.
What kind of labor do you hire?
Filipinos.
I see. Go on.
The crew foreman at the ranch, he's a Filipino we call Pedro, knew that my partner and I were going into town and offered to give us a ride in an automobile that belonged to one of his helpers. It looked good to us, and so we said yes.
And then this fellow Pedro drove you into town, eh?
No. He went with us. But the boy who owned the car drove.
And do you remember the boy's name?
I think they called him Prudencio. Anyway, we got into the car and were just ready to drive away from the ranch when...
Come on, Prudencio. Let's go.
Don't you think we'd better wait for Leon?
Leon? No. Let him get to town tomorrow.
You make a promise for him.
What's the matter? You're trying to leave without me?
Hurry up, then. You keep us waiting. Where are the two Mr. Singh in the box seat?
I hear you try to leave me behind.
No, we're not trying to leave you. You get in the middle here, between me and Prudencio.
Oh.
Now, let's go.
Cases back there getting your way, Mr. Singh?
No, not at all. We are very comfortable. It is right for you boys to take us into the bank.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Singh.
We'll be back at the ranch in a few minutes. I want you to figure out how much money we owe the hands, Pedro. I'm going to pay off this afternoon.
I already figured it out, Mr. Singh.
Good.
I have it here in this little book. 26 boys working. Each boy make 1 cent a pound, and they pick...
1 cent a pound? No one said these boys would get 1 cent a pound.
Oh, yes. You told me I should tell the boys that they make 1 cent a pound.
Yes, Mr. Singh. Pedro say 1 cent a pound.
That's impossible. If I pay you so much, I make nothing.
We don't know nothing about that. I think it's the price like I tell you, and you pay.
Not one pea rancher in the valley could pay you like that. The market price of peas is very bad this year, awful bad.
Just the same, I tell my Filipino boys what they make for picking, and they're going to get it.
You can't cheat us, Mr. Singh.
But I didn't tell you to make any such price.
Didn't I tell you, Prudencio, that Mr. Singh say 1 cent a pound?
Yes, that's what you tell me too, Prudencio.
Say, You're going past the ranch. Where are you taking us?
We want to talk to you about what you owe us before we go back. So we take you up a little road we know, where it's quiet.
You take us back to the ranch, or else you stop the car and let us out.
Not until we fix this thing up, Mr. C.
If you don't stop the car, I'll make you stop it.
Oh, no, you better be quiet and not try to do nothing.
I'll show you that I mean what I say.
Well, he's going to eat for dinner.
So you would try that thing?
You have the gun, Pedro. Shoot him.
No. Open the door of the car. Throw him out of the car.
I heard the shot. I don't remember anything more. I guess they threw me out of the car.
And you have no idea where they took your partner?
No. And I'm very much afraid for him. You see, he had in his pocket the $600 payroll he drew at the bank.
$600 in cash, huh? About what time would you say all this happened?
I think about 11 o'clock this morning. The bank closes at noon on Saturday, and we wanted to be in plenty of time to get the money.
Yes, of course. Now, just one more question, Mr. Singh. Do you know what kind of a car these three Filipinos were driving?
Pedro called it an Auburn. It's the kind that is all closed in.
Oh, yes, an Auburn sedan. Well, I'll leave you to get some rest now, and we'll start looking for your partner right away.
When Holmes returned to the substation from his interview with Shyam Singh, he found Under-Sheriff Rodney Clark and Deputy Sheriff Elliott waiting for him. Then, as they were discussing the details of the crime...
So it looks like our best bet is to locate that Auburn sedan, Clark.
Yeah, the sooner we get started, the better. Did Shyam Singh know the names of those three Filipinos who held him up and shot him?
Well, he knows their first names, that's all. Prudencio, Pedro, and Leon. Pedro seemed to be the ringleader.
That's not much good. All three are common Filipino names. Well, let's... Oh, wait a minute. Looks like one of those two Japanese who just came in wants to talk to you, Holmes.
Do you want to see me?
Oh, yes, please. Very important.
All right, spill it.
My friend and I are finding very strange things. We are finding Rotsom automobile having a dead man.
A dead man, you say?
Oh, yes, please. Same being very dead.
Now tell me... Was the dead man a Hindu?
Also, you already know, eh? Well,
not exactly. What kind of a car was it?
Automobile being orphan. Him have license plate from Arizona. Also have three suitcase in back. We taking good look.
So it seems. Can you show us where you found this car?
Also, we can show you all right.
Well, boys... This is what I was afraid of.
Yes, we've got murder against those three Filipinos now.
Yep, there it is, boys. There's the car we're looking for. Those Japanese gave us a good steer.
Yes, it looks like those Filipinos hit a blind road. That irrigation canal running across there only has a footbridge over it.
I think I know what happened. They meant to take a road about a half a mile farther up the highway. It looks just like this one when you turn off onto it, but I guess they were excited and turned off too soon.
Well, here we are. Let's see what we can find out.
That's sure a break. They're hitting the wrong road and having to abandon the car. Well, let's have a look in the back seat here. The poor fellow's dead, all right.
It'll be a good idea to open those suitcases and see what's inside.
Yeah. I'll hand them out to you.
All right.
While you're looking in them, I'll see if they left the registration in the car, Clark.
Nothing on the outside of these suitcases to tell us anything. No initials or travel stickers. Maybe when I open them up.
Well, the registration's still here. It gives the name of Prudencio Ramdares as the owner. Well, that checks with what Shyam Singh told me.
At least we know who one of them is. There's nothing in these suitcases but clothing... Toilet articles. Not a thing has any mark of identification on it. I'm afraid we won't get any clues from these.
The only thing I can see to do is go across that footbridge over the irrigation canal and see if we can pick up their tracks on the other side.
night closed in on Under Sheriff Clark and his two deputies without sight of the fugitive. Temporarily defeated, they turned back to town, taking the murder car with them, intent on returning in the early morning with horses to continue the manhunt. And then on their arrival at the Calipatria substation, an old prospector came forward to meet them.
Howdy, gentlemen. I'm coming to town here less than an hour ago to get some supplies, and the first thing I heard about was this here murder.
Yes, you don't happen to know anything about it, do you?
Well, not about the murder, no. But I think I know something about where the fellers is that done it.
Oh, fine. Let's have it. Where are they?
I come into town from the Chocolate Mountains using the old Beale's Well Road. Just where the trail hits the range, I seen three pair of footprints. I reckon they was made by the men you're looking for.
Great. Spotted. Why, it doesn't seem possible they could have gotten that far on foot, even with a 5-hour start.
Well, just the same, that's where I seen them prints. Looked like they might be making for Palo Verde over on the Colorado River.
But you didn't see anything of the men themselves?
Nope, just the tracks while I was driving along.
You're absolutely sure of what you saw?
Sure. I ain't so old, my eyes has gone sour on me. I know what I seen.
Hardly anyone ever travels that road, Clark. 60 miles long from Nyland on this edge to Palo Verde on the Arizona line, and only one water hole along the road.
Then there's a mighty slim chance of their picking up a ride, huh?
Practically no chance at all.
Then this is our chance, boys. We're driving into Palo Verde along the Beale's Well Road tonight.
I'll split the reward with you.
Leaving Holmes in charge of the substation and taking Constable Thetford in his place, Under Sheriff Clark and Deputy Elliott made the journey to Palo Verde. It was midnight when they reached their destination, for they had encountered no sign of the fugitives. Meanwhile, Clark contacted the Mexican passport photographer and obtained a print of every Filipino he had photographed for passport purposes. Clark and Thetford then presented a handful of photographs to Sham Singh at the county hospital.
Mr. Singh, we have reason to believe that the men who attacked you and killed your partner have their pictures among this group. Would you mind looking through them and see if you can identify any of the lot?
Sure. I wouldn't know these men in an instant. There's one of them. Let me see. Not this one. Not this. Not this. Here's another. Let me look for more.
Here, let me find the rest of these out for you so you can see them easier. There now.
No, we have them all. That man is a third.
You're sure of these identifications, Mr. Singh?
I'm positive.
Well, Thetford, they all agree on the same men.
Yeah.
This is the one who drove. The one they call Prudencio.
Yes, we know. Prudencio Rondales. We found his name on the car registration.
And this one is Pedro.
Gives his name as Gavino Manzano here, but we'll soon check up on that.
He was the bad one. The one who had the gun. This other is the one they call Leon.
Uh-huh. It gives his name here as Panteleon Rengor. Anyway, we know the men we want now, and thank you very much for your cooperation, Mr. Singh.
At once, copies of the photographs were mailed out to peace offices in California and Arizona. It was soon learned that all three men had been arrested at some previous date, and fingerprint records then followed the photographs. Meanwhile, 3 days of intensive search among the Filipino camps revealed no clue to the fugitives. It was at last concluded that they had been successful in eluding the cordon of officers. But several days later, a Filipino was brought into Clark's office.
Here's a boy who says he's something to tell us about Gavino Manzano, Clark.
Yes. What's your name, lad?
Enrico Garcia, sir.
All right. What is it you want to tell us?
Gavino. He say his name Ramon Simon, but he Gavino. He tried to take away from me my girlfriend.
When was this?
Just before he shoot Mr. Singh and the other Hindu and run away.
How do you know Gavino shot the Hindu?
I see it in the paper.
Oh.
When Gavino run away, this girl go away too.
What's the girl's name?
Maria Thorne. She come from Stockton, and for a while I go with her. But Gavino say he want her, and for me to keep away.
Do you know this girl's address in Stockton?
Yes. It is here on this piece of paper.
Oh, fine. Oh, thanks a lot, Garcia. This might be a big help.
If you catch this Scavino, you picked him good, no?
You bet we will.
But nearly 2 months went by, and the fugitives remained at large. And then police at San Jose telegraphed that Ponce-de-Leon Rengor had been seen and identified there. Instructions were wired back to arrest and hold him. And Sheriff George Campbell left immediately by automobile for that city. Upon arriving, the prisoner was brought out for transfer back to El Centro.
He's your man, Sheriff Campbell.
Huh? Why? Well, that's not Rengor.
Not Rengor? What do you mean?
Just what I say. That's not the man I want.
Are you sure?
Positive. Here's a photograph of Rengor. Look for yourself.
By George, I believe you're right. You'll admit there is a strong resemblance, though.
Well, sure, but that doesn't help me any.
Well, I'm sorry, Sheriff. Particularly after your long ride up here.
Oh, well, these things happen once in a while.
When are you leaving to go back to El Centro?
Well, might as well go right away. I think I'll drive out to the highway by way of the foreign quarter, just on the slim chance of seeing the man I'm looking for.
Isn't that asking for a lot, Sheriff?
I guess maybe it is. Well, goodbye.
Bye, Sheriff. Sorry things worked out the way they did.
Sitting in that parked car looks enough like Rengor to stop and have a good look.
Hey, young fella. I think you're the man a friend of mine spoke to me about.
Me? Why should somebody speak to you about me?
Well, I'll tell you. He thought maybe I could use you. Huh? Hold out your arms a minute so I can see how strong you are.
No, in front of you.
Well, what's the idea? Well, where do you want to put these handcuffs on me?
I think you know why without me telling you, Rengor. Now walk on over here to my car and don't give me any trouble.
You made a big mistake, senor.
Oh, no, I haven't.
What is it you're arresting me for?
For murder.
Murder?
Yep. The murder of Brahm Singh.
But they didn't kill him. It was Scavino Manzano.
Oh. But you admit that you were with Manzano at the time of the killing, do you?
Well, yes, but Scavino, he did the shooting.
How'd you fellas get away?
So some Pino boys hit us on a ranch for 2 days. Then they took us to Brawley at night, and we hit 2 more days. Then we come up here to San Jose.
What happened to Manzano and Rondari?
I don't know. They went away right after we got here.
You don't know where they went, eh?
No.
Well, maybe you do and maybe you don't. But I know where you're going, and I know where you're going to stay for a long, long time.
Following the arrest and confession of Rengor came a sudden switch in the search for one of the remaining two fugitives. Postal authorities in Stockton, watching the mail addressed to Maria Thorne, Manzano's girlfriend, intercepted a letter sent to her from Hanakoa, Hawaii, bearing the return address of R. Simone. All information concerning Manzano was immediately dispatched to Sheriff Henry K. Martin of Hawaii County, Hawaii, who in turn gave it to Deputy Sheriff William J. Richard of Hamakua County, in which the town of Hanakoa is located. Deputy Rickard acted on the information at once, and within 48 hours had discovered Manzano working in a laundry under the name of Simone. Quietly and skillfully, he made the arrest, and Manzano, like Rengor, was unaware that he was in custody until the handcuffs were on his wrists. Placed in jail in Hilo, Manzano was then confronted by Rickard and Sheriff Martin.
Well, Manzano, what have you got to say for yourself?
I don't know what you mean.
Oh, yes, you do. What have you got to say about that murder back in the States?
You talk like you think I did it. Well, I didn't.
You were there, weren't you?
Then who did it? The two Filipino boys who were with me. They got mad at the Hindus because they thought they didn't give them enough pay. So they shoot them both.
But you didn't have anything to do with that. Is that it?
No. I tried to save the Hindus and knock the gun out of my friend's hand, but it was too late.
Now, you don't expect us to believe that, do you?
I don't care whether you do or not.
Well, how did you manage to get away from the California officers that were looking for you?
I hire a friend to take me to San Diego after I go to a part of El Centro by walking. Then I went to Seattle by bus. Then in December, I come to Honolulu on boat from Vancouver. Pretty soon, I come to Hanukkah and work in laundry. Then I am arrested.
Just why did you come to the island?
Because I have brother and some cousins here. Because I want to get away from police in Imperial Valley.
That's what I thought. Well, I found out that your brother and your cousins would rather not have you here. They're afraid of you.
Sure, they're afraid of me.
Why? I didn't find you so tough when I arrested you.
No, that's because you take me by surprise, but you wait and see.
Wait for what? It's too late for you to do anything now, Manzano.
You think so, huh? Then listen. They'll never take me to the United States alive, do you hear? Never, never, never!
Word of Manzano's arrest was sent by Martin to Sheriff Campbell at El Centro, and Under Sheriff Clark was detailed to take the next boat to Honolulu in order to bring back his prisoner. But before the ship was 4 days at sea, Manzano had broken jail during the early morning hours of February 21st under the protection of a downpour of rain and disappeared into the island's dense morass of vegetation. Sheriff Martin immediately took personal charge of the search, assisted by his chief deputy, Peter N. Pacala.
Oh, it was the pounding of this confounded rain that made it possible, Peter. How could anyone hear him sawing away in this downpour?
It's just one of those things, Sheriff.
He's been in jail just 3 weeks, and under our very noses, he made a saw blade out of a flat bucket handle.
Well, we got to get him again, that's all.
You bet we've got to get him again. He's only been free a little while. We throw a cordon of motorcycle policemen around Hilo, say, around four territory 6 miles square. We ought to have him, sure.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
All right, then give orders to have this done right away. Then have as many police as can be spared search the territory between the lines. Won't be much chance of finding tracks, though. This rain will have washed them all out.
I'll give orders at once, Sheriff.
Not far from Hilo was the isolated home of a Filipino. There it was found that Manzano had appeared soon after his escape and demanded food and clothing. Two motorcycle officers, Amos Costa and Cicero Bento, were therefore stationed to guard the hut in the event of the outlaw's return. Then, early in the morning of the second day following Manzano's dash for freedom, these two officers were discussing the search while watching through one of the cottage windows.
Do you suppose Manzano really will come back here?
The Filipinos who live here seem to think so. They're scared to death.
Yeah, I know. They have him figured out as a pretty desperate character.
Well, when he was here before, these people gave him most of the food in the house and a really good suit of clothes. They wouldn't have done that if they hadn't been afraid of him.
Boys at the jail say Manzano swore that he'd never be sent back to the States alive. Do you suppose he meant the jailbreak or that he'd kill himself?
Well, I don't know. If he comes back here, he's as good as back in jail.
You're right on that. I was just wondering if... Look. Over where I'm pointing. By those trees.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I see him.
Manzano, all right. Naked as the day he was born.
Tore his clothes off, getting through that jungle, I guess. See, there he's looking around. Trying to figure out if it's safe to try for the house.
Now he's coming this way. We better be quiet, so there's no chance of his hearing us.
He stopped again. Suppose he heard us?
No. He's making for the door again. Come on. Let's get out of sight and wait.
He must be just outside the door now. All right, Manzano. You better surrender quietly.
Oh.
You, eh?
Get me if you can. Hold on to me, Carl.
Yes. Let him get away.
You think I can't get away?
No, no, you can't
get away. Let me alone.
Custer, yeah. Hurry, put the cuffs on.
Let me alone.
Yeah, I guess that'll hold you for a while.
Yeah. You.
Here. Throw this blanket around him. We'll take him in.
All right. You open the door.
All right. Now then, let's go, Manzano.
Yeah. You never will get me back to the jail, you...
Look out. He's broken away. He's starting to run. Shoot!
Wait.
Go ahead! Shoot me, Andrew!
Come
on, Costa. We've got to get him.
That's luck. He slipped and fell down.
All right. Yeah, we got you, Manzana.
Go on.
Now, don't try that again. You can't hold me in jail. You can't take me back to the United States.
Oh, yeah? You'll get shackles this time, so you can't possibly escape.
I'll never see the United States again. Never!
You're crazy, Manzana. You're looking at a part of it right now. Well, let's not stand in the rain all day. Come on, my vest pocket, Jesse James.
In just a moment, Sheriff Ware will conclude our program. If something went wrong to mar your motor trip over the weekend, make certain the next one is automotively perfect. Be sure the moving parts of your motor are protected by Realube, and keep the parts moving smoothly, powerfully, and economically with Rio Grande Crack, the police car performance motor fuel that is preferred by those who drive the most, who know the most about gasoline. And now, Sheriff Ware. Manzano was returned to California despite his vehement statements to the contrary. He was brought to trial and implicated by Rengor, who had been sentenced previously. Ronderas was arrested by the Santa Clara Sheriff's Office in 1937. He and Manzano were found guilty and sentenced to study for the remainder of their lives the lesson that crime of any sort cannot pay. Thank you, Sheriff Ware.
County Sheriff's Office calling all cars. Attention all cars. The cancellation of broadcast 281 regarding a murder. Suspects in this case are now in custody. That's all. Roll the clip.
This is your narrator, Frederick Lindsley, bidding you good night for Rio Grande.
Remember, 1 week from tomorrow night, Monday, May 1st at 9 o'clock, Rio Grande will present the case of the bitter wine. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.